live in the age of the soundbite. Our politicians know that they have to encapsulate their thought in just a few words if they're going to grab tomorrow's headlines, the slogan, the memorable phrase. So, for example, this year we've had Brexit means Brexit. No deal is better than a bad deal. Or then again, there is the people's vote. And what so often happens in the soundbite is that any real content gets lost. Matters of substance are trivialized. Well, in keeping with the age, let me give you Christmas in a soundbite, but we won't skimp on the content. It's there at the end of our second reading, verse 14, Christmas in four words, the Word became flesh. And if those four words are to be believed, then Christmas is shockingly personal. It takes God out of the world of ideas, a concept to be discussed, and brings him down to our level. Now, I know some people love the abstract. Debating abstract ideas is food and drink to them. Others of us struggle with the abstract world. Might be because I used to be a civil engineer. I like things a bit more concrete than that. Well, these four words tell me that God is more than mere abstract. God is more than the overarching explanation of everything. The Word became flesh. An idea, in fact, the big idea that underpins everything, became flesh. An idea with skin on it. Not just an idea, but a person. Christmas is shockingly personal. It changes all the God talk. John here has been going on about receiving and rejecting the Word. And now I find it's not an idea that I'm throwing in the bin. It's a person that I'm kicking in the teeth. Not a theory to live by, but a person to walk with through life. The Word became flesh. Four simple words, but feel the shock that they hold. A person. An at my level person. But how did he begin the chapter? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. And this Word has stepped into the world that he made. Don't know if you ever saw that TV program. I think it was called Back to the Floor. The one episode I watched, I remember it was the owner of a refuse company who went on the trucks driving round the streets of London collecting the rubbish. He faced the pressures, the schedules, the dirt, the filth, the abuse. He had drivers shouting at him for a whole week. The Word became flesh for a lifetime. Well, for eternity. Why? In our Olympic bids, we often wheel out one of our star athletes to try and support the bid. I remember Matthew Pinsent describing how he'd had an hour or so with David Beckham. They'd walked out to take the coach back to the hotel. And Pinsent was dumbfounded by the frenzy around Beckham. People grabbing at him, desperate for an autograph or a selfie. And finally, when they made it to the coach, and the both of them collapsed, able to relax for a moment. But the very next moment, people were by the window. They were hammering at the window, desperate to get Beckham's attention and to get a photograph and so on. And Pinsent himself, no stranger to publicity, he said, "Is it always like this?" And Beckham replied, "All the time. Public property. Just there to be gawked at." Well, listen to this. Here's John writing later in a letter. That which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. Handled, touched. It has a sense of being on display, public property. If I were God, I would have guarded my privacy a bit more carefully, wouldn't you? Christmas is shockingly personal. The Word became flesh. And there's more to it than became human. That word flesh is starker, more shocking. The Latin translation is carne. And if you've ever had chili con carne, the Word became meat. Now, many of John's first readers, they would have been wincing at that. Because the Greeks loved to separate the spiritual and the physical. But God united them at Christmas. Some Eastern religions today, some Western ideas of spirituality, often speak about the spiritual side, as if it was separate from the physical me. At Christmas, God stepped into a body, not out of a body. The Word became flesh. Here's a Christmas shock in a world that is fixated on body and shape. God became flesh and experienced ugliness. His appearance was disfigured. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing that we should desire him, wrote the prophet Isaiah. Jesus would not have made the cover of Hello magazine. The Word became flesh. And I'm asking why? Well, how does John explain it? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. He wanted to live among us, to relate to us. It's got the sense of he pitched his tent among us. But don't think of a camping weekend. Literally, it's he tabernacled amongst us. And that's taken from the Old Testament, from a time when God's people were nomadic, living in tents. And there in the middle was a special tent, a tabernacle, which was a symbol of God's presence with his people in the middle of the camp, a sort of canvas temple. God's place. Well, no tent pegs here, no guy ropes. If you're going to put up one of those blue plaques, God lived here, don't put it on a wall. Don't put it on a place. Put it on a person. All that Old Testament tabernacle symbolized is now realized in Jesus. God's desire to live among his people. The Word became flesh. Christmas is shockingly personal. So John points to this Jesus and says, there's God. With embarrassing humility, God comes all the way down, 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 down to my level and says, here I am. A flesh and blood word for a flesh and blood world. There's a church up in Glasgow that every Thursday night goes on a soup run. They visit hostels and those living rough under the flyovers and so on. And they take each one a hot drink, a soup and a sandwich. And at this time of year, a Christmas present. The man who heads up it is a businessman called Wally. And for the last 15 years, he's not missed a single Thursday evening to be part of the work. Well, at about 3 o'clock one morning, he found a drunk lying on a grating near a department store. And he went up to him and he recognized him. He shook him and said, Jock, it's Wally here. I've got some food for you. No response. And eventually, Wally lay on the ground beside Jock, He spoke to him face to face. He gave him some hot chocolate and put some sandwiches and the prezi in the pocket of his overcoat. Well, there's a thumbnail picture of Christmas for us. God could have ignored us, just as Wally could have chosen to stay at home with his feet up in front of the telly any Thursday night. Well, instead, God comes down to my level in Jesus to know me, to relate to me, to you. The Word became flesh. So much packed into those four words. When John speaks about receiving and rejecting the light, the Word, it is this one, the one who weaves the universe together, the one who sheds light in the darkness. Not only is Christmas shockingly personal, these four words tell me that Christmas is wonderfully revealing. Sometimes Christmas can come wrapped in nostalgia. I mean, it was before our time, we say. We weren't there. The Word became flesh. Even if it did, it's such a long time ago, it seems a bit of a mystery. Well, did you notice how John carries on as he does? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. You see, the New Testament record is from those who were there, who did see and hear and handle and touch. The New Testament is the record of those who can tell us. That's why we keep opening it here at St. John's. Don't want to hear my foggy guesswork about God. We have seen his glory, says John. The glory of the one and only, the real McCoy. No one else is going to come and give me another slant on God to be a new light for a different age. So what's he like? You're lying in the gutter, you come to, you feel in your pocket, you unwrap the present, and you discover he's full of grace and truth. That is an astonishing combination. Grace and truth. I think as a society we struggle with truth. We alternate between saying there's no such thing as truth, and then if only I could lay my hands on the truth and know for sure. We want to know what God is like. What the truth is that he turns out to be so utterly holy that he does not stand any failure. Well, God coming near is a bit scary then, isn't it? The Word became flesh. That has a terrifying soundbite, if that's the case. When Jesus comes as a human being, I'm face to face with God, as he really is. And I can't live with that sort of holiness. We've all stood, haven't we? Where the woman caught in adultery stood. I don't mean we're all adulterers, but we know what it is to be exposed, to have been in the wrong, have done what is wrong, deserving the judgment that's coming to us. The truth is all very well, but there is a truth that I don't like to hear, that I run away from. The journalist Belle Mooney did a series of radio interviews entitled Devout Skeptics. And one of them was with Philip Pullman, the author of the Dark Materials trilogy. She said, when I finished The Amber Spyglass, that's book one of the trilogy, one of the things I thought was, Philip Pullman hates the church. But all the clergy I meet are decent enough, doing good things, bringing comfort to pensioners and so on. They're not burning witches. Not anymore, they're not, said Pullman. They wouldn't get away with it now. And Mooney replies, but they wouldn't want to. No, says Pullman, not the nice, gentle ones, but the ones who are full of hellfire and damnation when anyone disagrees with them. Well, maybe you recognise the sort of clergy he's talking about. But you don't recognise our God in those words of Pullman, because he is full of grace and truth. Grace is not giving us what we deserve. Forgiveness instead of judgment. Hope instead of despair. Life instead of death. It's giving what is not deserved without letting go of the truth. Now, we struggle to hold those two together, grace and truth. A few years ago, the governor of California had to decide in the case of Stanley Tukey Williams. He was the founder of a notorious gang who had committed several murders, brutal murders, and was sentenced to death. In prison, he seemed to be rehabilitated. He wrote some anti-gang literature. He was even nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. As he waited on death row, his lawyers argued that he was worth more alive than dead because of the work that he was doing amongst youths attracted to gangs. You see the dilemma the governor faced? Do I agree with the appeal and let him go? But what then about those brutal murders? Or do I deny the appeal and execute? And justice then seems so harsh. Now, you and I may not have committed murder. I hope not. None of us have, but we've all got on the wrong side of God. None of us can earn grace, as Tukey Williams discovered. How is it that God can hold grace and truth together? If you know the story of that story of the woman caught in adultery, you'll know that Jesus didn't deny the truth of what she'd done. It was wrong. But he also offered her grace. Go now and leave your life of sin. And I guess if the story had ended there, it would have been fudging the truth. Sometimes children ask the best questions, don't they? There was once a young girl who was sat on Santa's knee and he was telling her the story of the Saviour's birth. And she said to him, yes, but how does the story end? Well, that's a good question. Story doesn't end with a baby in a manger, but becomes the Christ hanging on the cross for us. Sin gets its right and proper penalty, but my justice is taken by an innocent other, the Word made flesh, as we will remember in the communion tonight, so that I can be offered grace despite how I've treated God. That's why Jesus came, to be both full of grace and full of truth, full of mercy, full of justice. Christmas is wonderfully revealing. It shows those two being held together. So there we have it, Christmas in four words. The Word became flesh, shockingly personal, and wonderfully revealing. My dark side, your dark side, out in the open, no more pretending, and yet grace, pardon, forgiveness offered where only guilt and judgment are deserved. and offered at great cost to him. And when he came into the world, as John explains, people responded in two completely different ways. Either it rejected him, it did not recognize him, verse 10 here, it did not receive him, verse 11, or it received him, trusted him, rested upon him. And to those, verse 12, he gave the right to become children of God, to become one of his family. Christmas in a soundbite. The Word became flesh. And yet it searches us all, doesn't it? The Word became flesh. But where do you stand this Christmas? When this Word, this Jesus, is stood in front of you. You see, there can be no middle ground before this Word, this Jesus. It is either rejecting or receiving. As we sit, let's pray.